purpose, because you can't break away from the worship of idolatry, the methods of worship of idolatry. So therefore, we take these methods and we employ them for the real. Yeah. So therefore, you could gradually change. You see, according to the second way, on the contrary, you're supposed to make not a gradual change, but a very sudden change, and take those animals which they use for their worship and kill them. Which would seem the opposite. What's the formulation here in the Rambam? We have to unify both parts of the Rambam over here. Both chapters have to be one theory.
What is life?
The thing is like this. The Rambam is saying is like this, really. The Rambam is saying that the emotions, the originally, the people used to use these animals to sacrifice to their gods. Okay, Avodah Zarah. Right, now, he said it would be too difficult to change this, the method of sacrificing. So, the method of worship. But what had to be changed was the object of worship. Okay? The object of worship. In other words, what the Rambam is saying is like this, that these emotions, which were directed towards certain primitive goals had to be changed, and they had to be redirected towards goals in reality, which is God. God is the source of reality, so you had to change it. Oh. Now, you couldn't make a drastic change, because the drastic change would be impossible. Like the Rambam says, in nature, you see, you have to go slowly, you have to go step by step. You need an introduction. So what was the method? So the method was to take those emotions which were, they couldn't rid themselves of the emotions totally. But the object of the emotions, had to be changed. Alright? Now, the thing is like this. How was the object of the emotions changed? How was it changed really? How do you sublimate these emotions? How do you take these same emotions which were used primarily for what? Primarily for primitive, to serve certain primitive goals. How do you change it and take the energy and make it used for realistic goals towards God, towards reality, the source of reality? How do you do it? So the Rambam is very cautious. The Rambam says that's why you needed certain circumstances, the Rambam says. Have you noticed how he mentions over there? He says you had to have Migdash. You had to have Kehanim. It had to be in the hands of Kehanim only. There were certain halachis that were necessary in order to safeguard. Why to safeguard? Because there's always a danger that the same emotions are going to come out again towards God. And that's why the Rambam says that the Navi Yirmiyo criticized the people for their kabbonis. Why did he criticize the people for their kabbonis? Because on the contrary, why did they bring kabbonis? The Rambam says, the Yirmiyo said they weren't fulfilling the objective. So then what was the kabbonis? So then the kabbonis, on the contrary, was steeping, they were steeping themselves again into the primitive emotions. You see? They were going back. They were steeping themselves into the primitive emotions. You know, one big kasha that they ask on the Rambam is, they say, how can we be mispal in the tefillah that we were mispal the menechten gilim atzenu v'shem na'asal f'necha skobin eschoveseinu? So how can we be mispal like that in Musaf? If the, on the contrary, that's not a good thing. We should better be able to not have the mikdash anymore, and then just be able to daven, pray, like the Rambam says, supplication. You have to understand what happened. According to the Rambam, see, the Rambam alludes to it over here. The Rambam says that the Navi criticized the Jews. Why did he criticize the Jews? Not only that, he says, did I ever tell you to bring kabbonis? So the Rambam says, what do you mean? He gave him mitzvahs, they all ask. No, the answer is that the kabbonis were only there for the purpose of knowledge of God, of directing one's emotions, one's instincts towards God. But once that objective is thwarted, once you're not doing it for that purpose anymore, then what happens? Then on the contrary, then you become steeped in the same primitive emotions again. Because what's the only way to go through the process of worship and not worship God, which is a source of reality, is to have just an emotional religious experience. which is basically a primitive experience. So that's why the Navi criticized them for Kabbanis. The Rambam brings an excellent raya to his Shita, you see? Why was the Mikdash destroyed then, according to the Rambam? It's very good. The Mikdash had to be destroyed because the only purpose that it was serving was, on the contrary, was it became something which was serving the primitive emotions of man. So that's why God destroyed it. And he took it away from us because it was worse, you see. So why do we misfollow? That's why we're misfollow for the rebuilding Shebana based on Mikdash. It means that we should be on the level where what? Where we could use our emotions for the true purpose. When I'm a spaller, we should be on the level that we don't need a mikdash anymore. That would be arrogant and audacious on our part because we're not on that level, you see. But on the contrary, a spaller, we should be on the level where the mikdash could be utilized as a tool, as a means towards reaching God. The reason why it was taken away from us was because we weren't on that level, and we weren't reaching God through Mikdash. If we weren't reaching God through Mikdash, then what happens? Then it becomes simply a source of sacrifices and ceremonies, which play a part in the primitive mind of man. You see, that's the pshat. That's the pshat in the Rambam. That's why it's not kasha why we must follow for that the Mikdash should return and the Shem Nasa Nechas Kabbanas Chaveseinu. We should be in the level where we should be able to utilize the Mikdash as a means of reaching God, you see, to sublimate the emotions properly. Okay. Now the thing is like this. That's the Rambam's thesis. That's what the Rambam mentions both of those parts. There's a danger in it also. Danger in Mikdash. And that's really what's the safeguard of the Mikdash? What's the safeguard of Mikdash? What is the real institution that prevents, if the Mikdash is used properly, that allows man to use the Mikdash to raise him to a higher level, not to fall into primitive idolatry. What is it? Halacha, exactly. It's the system of halacha. Because halacha strikes out directly at the very core of the primitive emotions of man. Because halacha is regulated logically, not emotionally. Emotions pick on certain particulars. You see, emotions are attached to certain particulars which have certain representations in the mind, certain symbolic type of representation. Whereas halacha is a purely logical formulation. Halacha goes exactly against the emotion, breaks the emotion. It's not dependent upon the physical symbols, but it's dependent upon a certain system of halacha. It's pasul, kosher. All these things do not cater to the emotions. The emotions will not accept that if something is not done in a certain specific way, that it's going to be possible. Emotionally, it should all be good. That's why the Rambam says that God did not permit everyone to makriv kabbanis. Because if everyone makriv kabbanis, so each one's going to makriv according to their own emotions, the halacha would not be safeguarded. Only the kahanim were the ones that were allowed. Why? Because the kahanim were the ones that were able to safeguard the halachic system. They were trusted with it. You can't trust an individual with such a thing. Especially in an area like this, where it's highly emotional, he's liable to fall into a certain primitive state, you see, an individual is going to go astray. But a group of kahanim, who are chachamim, kahan is not just a kahan, kahan is the Rebbe, Isaac and Torah, Levian, they spend their time in Isaac and Torah, and they have nothing, that's their whole lives, essentially. This kahan only worked two mishmarim a year. They spent this time learning Torah. That type of person, a person who's a baal halacha, him you could trust with the sacrifice, but you can't trust anybody else. You see, because the halachic system is what safeguards the person from falling prey to the primitive emotions. Okay, that's what the Rambam says. All right, now you can understand the answer to the Ramban's kasha. What's the Ramban's kasha? Ramban's kasha was one thing. What was Ramban's kasha? Ramban's kasha was, now you're falling into the hands again. Why? Because you're sacrificing those very animals. You should better eat the animals. No, you're not falling into the hands. Why not? What's the answer? Because, you see, you're only falling into their hands if the action is done in the primitive superstitious way. That's when you're falling into the hands. But if it's done in the halachic way, which is the rational way, In Mikdash, what prevailed, what determined Kabbonis, whether the kosher, whether the apostle, and how everything should be done, was only rationale. He had to be a chacham, a tremendous lamdan in kachim. That was the determinant. Not emotions. A kohen couldn't say, I feel this is good, God will like this. Nonsense. He has to, only the halacha was the thing which predominated, which determined what should really take place in the Mikdash. So the safeguard, you see, the whole system of Avodah was a rational system. Now, since it was a rational system, on the contrary, the primitive emotion does not wish to allow that if you wouldn't allow sheep to be sacrificed in the Mikdash, then sheep would remain this animal, since this animal, people attached a lot of primitive emotion to it, so then the person would be able to retain his feelings towards that animal and think it's safeguarded. But when it's brought into the Mikdash and it is sacrificed in a way in which the rationality dictates what is done, that is not what the primitive emotion is after. That's the opposite of the emotion. See, the halachic system is the opposite of the emotion. The halachic system is the workings of reality, the workings of the intellect. So when the sheep had to be, the sheep was brought as a sacrifice, but the sheep, in order to be brought as a sacrifice, it was dealt with in the rational halachic fashion. That's what precisely removed the primitive sacrifice. See, there's primitive sacrifice, and then there's a sacrifice that we have in Mikdash. The word sacrifice is bad, because the word sacrifice, we always attach a certain emotion to it, which is really a primitive emotion. You see, the Mikdash is in contradistinction to the Avodah Zarah. Why? Because Avodah Zarah, what is the prime mover of the Avodah Zarah? What is the prime mover of a soul? The prime mover of a soul is emotion. What's the prime mover in Mikdash? Halacha. It's two different things. So on the contrary, when you take the sheep, which was ordinarily used for what purpose? For the emotion, and now it's ordinarily used in terms of emotion, and now you put it in the halachic, now it's used in the halachic framework, that's when you're breaking the emotion. You understand what I mean? That's what the Rambam means. That's what the Rambam means in the second part that the Ramban quotes. The reason, the Ramban's kasha is a kasha based upon one premise, that the same emotion of sacrifice, you see, the same emotion of sacrifice is going to prevail. So he says, on the contrary, you're playing into the hands. It's not the same emotion of sacrifice according to the Rambam. It's a totally different thing. The emotion of sacrifice is gone, because that emotion of sacrifice is a primitive emotion. That's a sacrifice in which the emotions predominate. But in Mikdash, what predominates? Not the emotions, but intellect, but mind. You understand what I mean? In that area, so the Mikdash stands in contradistinction to the Kabbonis of Umay's Olam. It has nothing in common with it. The word sacrifice isn't good, because the word sacrifice implies that there's something in common. There's nothing in common. Completely diametrically opposed. Now, when you take the sheep, which is an object of emotion, and you use it, it's used in a way, in a process which is diametrically opposed to the other system, that's when the emotion is broken. And that's why, precisely, these animals are used. That's what the Rambam means. The Ramban's question is only based upon one thing. What is it based upon? Ramban's question is based upon that there is the same emotion of sacrifice. Now, what the Rambam means in the first part, you'll ask me, but the Rambam says that they couldn't go directly to tefillah. They had to have kabbonis. What does the Rambam mean over there? The Rambam means not that the same emotion of sacrifice prevailed in Mikdash. The Rambam would say chalila. That'll be avodah zarah. It doesn't mean, not the same emotion prevailed. The activities were retained. The actions were retained, but the actions were given a new framework. What was the framework? Of rationale. They were clothed in rationale. The actions were rational. Had to conform to rationality. So on the contrary, that's how the emotion was broken, by taking an action, which is an emotional action, and having it conform to a logical system of lomdus and halacha, you see? That's precisely how it was broken. And the same way, the Rambam says, the sheep, those animals to which people attach certain emotions, they were taken from the system in which they were used emotionally, and they were put in the rational system. This is what broke the attachment to these animals, the emotional attachment to these animals. Do you understand what I mean? The Rambam is saying like this, essentially, there are two systems in man. There is the primitive part of man, and then there's the higher part of man. Now, Avodah Zorah is the primitive part of man in action, you see? Halacha is exactly the opposite. That's the higher part of man, okay? That's mind, that's machshava, that's lamdas, that's ideas. Two different parts of man. Now, what God did was, he took people who were attached to the primitive, living, having the primitive being the prime mover of their souls, and he wanted to convert them that they should have the higher part of man to be the prime mover of their souls, right? Now, he couldn't do it without just instantaneously. So what was necessary was what? To take the actions, to retain the actions, because the actions isn't the poison. What's the poison is the way they relate to these actions. On the contrary, to take these actions which stem from primitive sources, you see, and to put them under the sway of the intellect, of the mind. Once they're placed under the sway of the mind, the emotion is broken, you see? By the same, that, now Mikdash represents, really, Mikdash represents total intellectuality. The kabbonis, the word sacrifice, is a different meaning over there. Sacrifice is a primitive expression for the Avdei Avodah Zarah, for the mitzvah, for the kazdim. But for us, kabbonis means, on the contrary, it means a performance which is guided and which is totally under the sway of what? Of the rational principle. How do you decide a shayla and kachin? No kain ever. You have to decide a shayla and kachin by going through the shittas, the machlekes hatanayim amorayim, and the shittas rishayim, and understanding how it works. Totally in terms of chachma. That's the sole determinant, is chachma. There's nothing else. So that moves the person to the higher. It moves them into the higher sphere. So which part predominates now? The higher sphere predominates. So it takes the emotion of carbon, and in the very same activities, it breaks those activities, those very same activities which were once used emotionally, now he uses them intellectually. So that's how it breaks the emotion. And the same animal that was one time used for an emotional primitive performance is now used in the sphere of the intellect. You see? So therefore, that's what the Rambam means. That's how it is broken. You see? That's the way it is broken. The premise that the Ramban's kash is based upon one premise. The Ramban's kash is based upon the premise that they're going to slip back, that in the Migdash they also have some of this emotion. If they have some of this emotion in Migdash, then the Ramban is right. So then you shouldn't give them the animal, because if the emotion's there, then they're going to fall prey to this thing. You understand what I mean? But according to the Rambam, it's not true. Because according to the Rambam, Migdash, the very institution of Migdash, removes those emotions. The very institution of Migdash, with the whole system of Halacha, removes those emotions. So there's no danger. If Migdash is run properly, so then there's no danger of the emotions creeping into the primitive emotions creeping into the Migdash in the form of the idea of sacrifice. You see? Since there is no danger, so on the contrary, then you must take those animals, which were the object of the emotion, and use them in this method to break the emotion from them, just like you take those same actions. There's no difference. You see? That's exactly the Rambam sheet. There's one sheet that's straight through. The sheet is, the approach is to take, when a person has a, if a person lives in a primitive way, you can't just remove him from those primitive emotions, because he's tied to them. What do you have to do? You have to take those same actions which he did, and you have to apply a different system to them. But the different system will not correspond, halacha will never correspond to the way the person feels emotionally towards the sacrifice. Because halacha is a rigid intellectual system. It can never correspond to the emotions. Emotions don't correspond to a logical system. Emotions correspond to a certain symbolic system. You see? Now halacha will always break that system, like I mentioned by Nida also, in the Nida class. Sometimes it's dam nida, same menstrual dam. Sometimes tameh, sometimes tahor. It's dam toyer. Depends on depends on so many conditions. The emotion, there's emotions with the primitive tribes feel menstruation is taboo. But that's menstruation is taboo. But in halacha, it's not so. In halacha, sometimes it could be menstruation and not be nida. It could be dam nida without being menstruation. There are all the different things. Now it's tahor, now it's tameh. This breaks the emotion because it follows a logical pattern. The same thing in Migdash with kabbonis. That's the exact same idea. The method that was used to purify the nature, the basic primitive nature of man, was the halachic system, because the halachic system breaks down this emotional, this primitive emotional state. by giving rational criteria for the performance. The rational criteria are not the same as the emotional, will never be the same as the emotional criteria, you see? Therefore, it goes against the emotional criteria. They'll never correspond, and that's what breaks the emotion. You follow what I'm saying? That's the answer to the Ramban's kasha on the Rambam. That's the basic answer. Yes. On the contrary, what happens is, if sometimes when was the Migdash was destroyed, is when the emotion starts to take over, and the means, like the Rambam says, instead of the end coming about, the means becomes the end. That's when the Migdash was destroyed. Because then the primitive emotions are arising again. So God had to take away the Migdash. You see? According to the Rambam, the gain of Karbonis is to break the primitive emotions, primitive religious emotions. Our religion is not the same as the Rambam's Das Emes. Why is Das Emes? Because our religion is the religion of reality. It's not tied, it has no relationship. God is the source of reality. It has no relationship to other religious performances. Religious performances per se, according to the Rambam, are emotional performances. They have nothing to do with reality. They believe in a different reality. That's religious religious performance, religions. We do not believe in a different reality. We believe in the God, the same God who created heaven and earth, the God of reality. That's the God that we worship. We don't worship a different reality. You see? Whereas religion attempts to find another reality. Religion is looking for another reality which satisfies certain primitive needs in man, you see? But Yadus is the opposite way, according to the Rambam. Yadus is the opposite way. Alright? You understand what I'm saying? That's the whole institution. That's why we're mispowering Yabana based on Migdash. Because the reason why the Migdash was taken away was because we started to go back, to slip back to the primitive emotions, like Yirmiyahu criticized. That's why it's taken away. Now we can't misspell that we don't need Migdash. No, we need Migdash today also. People are very primitive today also. Don't think, the reason why the idolaters did these things is not just a matter of a historical fact. They did it because they catered to certain primitive emotions which they had and which we have too. They're the same people. There's no difference between man. Man's nature didn't change. So therefore, we need Migdash also to remove ourselves from certain primitive ideas, you see. That's why we're misspelling Migdash return. That's the answer according to the Rambam. And the Ramban's kasha is no kasha, because the Rambam maintains that there was not the pshat is that they had the same emotion in the Migdash that they did in the primitive state. The emotion was broken by the institution of Migdash. That's why only Kahanim could be in charge. You see? That's the Rambam Shita. Okay. He thought the Rambam meant that the primitive emotion is still there in Migdash. But that's the way the Ramban learned the Ramban. The primitive emotion is still there, but it's being taken away from the Avodah Zarah. Not the pshat. According to the Ramban, it's removed completely. You see, that's what the Ramban maintains. It's removed completely. Exactly. Once it's removed completely, now the other kasha Ramban falls off. The other kasha Ramban was actually use the animals. On the contrary, you should use those animals. Because since the emotions is removed, so take those animals to which the emotions were attached and break the emotion and use it in Migdash. Migdash is diametrically opposed. Avodas Hashem is diametrically opposed to Avodah Zarah. Not just that we're not worshipping that over there, we're worshipping God. It's a different type of thing altogether. It's qualitatively differentiated. The whole experience is a different experience. See? Okay. The killing of the animal means that you can't kill this animal for a rational purpose. It means that it has a supernatural thing to it. And that's why you can't kill it. When you're killing it in Migdash, you're killing it for a rational purpose. The killing in the Migdash is for rational means, for rational purpose. And that's exactly the opposite. The whole supernatural emotion is you can't kill us for rational purpose. You understand what I mean? That's the emotion. See, they were very influenced by the Egyptians also. Even though the Erev Rav was the one that started it with the eagle, but they went along. They went along because they were also subject to those emotions. They weren't free from the emotions of society, just like we today aren't free from the Christian emotions. All right. Yes, the one thing, according to the Rambam, the idea of the korban, of taking a seh, that was precisely the idea. The idea was to take this thing, which you think a supernatural purpose, and use it for a rational purpose, a migdash. See? Exactly. The migdash didn't have any supernatural primitive attachment to it. It was totally something which was done totally for the rational purpose. Unfortunately, you find people even today who will attach supernatural feelings, primitive emotions, to migdash. And that's why we don't have migdash today. Now let's return to the Rambam over. We didn't finish. So what does the Rambam say? Now let's understand the Rambam. It's like this. He says, Torah avoid and gemilas chasadim. What does Rambam say avoid is? He says, avoid is ubishmiras mitzvah satera. Hey makabonis. What does the Rambam mean? You see, the really the truth of the matter is, what the Rambam means like this, that the Karbonis, what is the object of the Karbonis, really? The object of the Karbonis is to get a person to know God. That was the institution that was directly used to sublimate the emotions, the primitive emotions. Yeah, but really, you could extend the same idea to all the mitzvahs of Torah, because all the mitzvahs of Torah are there for just to give us that one idea. That's the whole purpose of the mitzvah of Torah. But Karbonis was an institution, a specific institution directed against a certain system, a certain primitive system. Do you understand what I mean? It represents the idea to the greatest degree. But in actuality, all the mitzvahs really have that purpose. What's the purpose of the mitzvahs? To know Hashem, like the Rambam says by Karbonis. But Karbonis was a specific means directed against a certain primitivism in man. But it partakes of the same purpose of all the mitzvahs in general, which is to know God, right? So that's why the Rambam says, that's what the Rambam learns Avodah. What is Avodah? What's Shad Avodah according to the Rambam? What's Shad Avodah? The world seems to think three things, Torah, Avodah, and Gemilas Chasadim. Avodah means what? Avodah means the constant activity of man, which is brought about through action, through mitzvahs, of removing his primitive nature. You see, removing his primitive nature. Basically, all the perfection of man comes about by one thing. He is born with instincts, and he has primitive emotions. His whole life he spends undoing those primitive emotions. If he moves ahead. So therefore, that's why Avodah is the second constituent. You see, Avodah is the second constituent, because the whole process that man undergoes in perfection is removing the primitive emotions, and that's represented most by Avodah, by Karbonis, but the other mitzvahs also, but not to the same degree, because by Karbonis was a separate institution which was necessary to which was created. You see, the other mitzvahs, of course, raise a person. There's a difference. What's the difference between the other mitzvah and Karbonis? There's one difference between the other mitzvah and Karbonis. There's one difference. What's the difference? How would you define the difference? They all have the same purpose. L'das is Hashem, like the Rambam says. But what's the difference, really, between Karbonis and between the other mitzvahs? There's one essential difference. What is it? How would you define it? The other mitzvahs are insofar as man naturally would need them. You see? So far as man naturally, he has to go through this process. But Karbonis is directed against the specific chuliyah nefesh. Karbonis is directed against a specific chuli hanefesh that has to be removed, whereas the other ones, even without the chuli hanefesh, it's necessary to have the other mitzvahs, but basically they have the same purpose. So the reason why it uses avodah is because it takes the most extreme, which means the avodah means the removal of primitivism when the primitivism reaches this state of chuli hanefesh already. That's why you have to have Karbonis, where the primitivism reaches a point where it becomes a chuli hanefesh, becomes a point where he's ill already, he can't see straight already. That's why you need the institution of Karbonis to counteract that. You see, once, let's say you did counteract that, you still need the other mitzvahs. You still need the other mitzvahs to remove his attachment, his instinctual attachment. So basically, Karbonis represents the removal of instinctual attachments. So that's the second component. The second component necessary for all mitzvahs are removal of instinctual attachments. That's what the mitzvahs are, basically. You see, and the difference is that Karbonis is an institution which is directed against chuli hanefesh. Chuli hanefesh specifically. Chuli hanefesh means when the instincts take a certain specific form already, and they're not amenable. They're not amenable anymore to improvement. You have to have another institution to counteract them. That's Karbonis. You understand what I mean? There's a person who's in a state where he's amenable. He's amenable. He's capable of being improved. He doesn't need that. He doesn't need Karbonis. But there's a person who is in a state of chuli hanefesh where he's not amenable to improvement. He must have Karbonis. You understand what I'm saying? The difference would be like this. Everybody needs healthy food in order to be healthy. Prevention. But then there's a disease. So you must have a cure for the disease. Karbonis was an institution which was a cure for a certain disease. You see? But good food is always necessary. That's the mitzvahs are always necessary. You understand? It's the same purpose. That's why the Rambam says Avodah. And that's what the Rambam says in both words. He says, Ubishmiras mitzvahs atera heim hakarbonis. See? That's what it means. It's both. Now we're lacking. Exactly. See, now we're... Yeah, good, good, good. You're right. Now we're lacking. Now we, according to the Rambam, now we're lacking because a certain part of our primitive nature is not being removed by Kabbonis. But you still have Tehillah. But I, why don't you have it? You don't have it because you can't have Kabbonis unless you have the protection of Migdash. To have Kabbonis without the protection of Migdash would be a total disaster. And Migdash we're not deserving of. So that's why I pray for Migdash. But the only thing is that we don't have the ability, we don't have a system of perfecting ourselves as we did in the times of the Migdash. Yes, right. Correct. But we still have the Tehillah. We still have Tehillah. You see? It's harder, it's more difficult today. That's the Rambam.
So in short, to summarize what we said last week, the difference between the Ramban's Kasha and the Rambam, about Kabbonis.
Which one?
So the premise that the Ramban's questions were based upon, was what? Was that it's the same type of activity, but it only differs with regard to the object. Whereas the Rambam maintained that the institution of Migdash brought with it a qualitatively differentiated experience, a rational experience. If that's the case, so then precisely those Kabbonis that they used to be makrif to their gods, which had a superstitious connotation, they should take those things and use them in a rational way, you see. That's the Rambam's pshat. The other question the Ramban asks is the question about Noyach and the question about Cain and Hevel. See, then if the purpose of Kabbonis was that he asks that to remove them from the practices of the Chaldeans. So then why at that time there was no Kazdi and there was no no Mitzri in that at that time. Yeah. Now, I won't answer. I can't tell you what the Rambam would answer to that question. It's a little bit far away from the facts. But the only thing I would say is this, that you have to differentiate between the problem the Rambam's dealing with and the carbon of Noach or the carbon of Hevel. You see? The difference is that the Rambam's question was why an institution of Aveda was set up in the Migdash, a constant institution of Aveda, everyday Kabbonis, and the whole system of Kabbonis, a constant institution, you see. That's what was disturbing the Rambam. Why an isolated carbon was brought is a different problem altogether. Why Noach at that time brought a carbon is a separate reason. Of course, it had nothing to do with the Kazdim, practices of the Kazdim. But the Rambam in the Meira was concerned with the fact that the Kabbonis were brought to such a great degree. You see, it was a constant thing, that the constant Migdash and Karbon is synonymous. You see, constantly. Why the necessity? The Rambam's not denying that there might be an isolated instance in which a person might want to bring a carbon. What the motivation for that is, I don't want to say, because there would be too much conjecture, you know what I mean? But I just want to say that the Rambam is only concerned with the fact that in Migdash wasn't the spontaneous brought, an individual brought spontaneously a carbon. See, it was a whole institution of Aveda. Constantly. So the thing is that that's what was disturbing the Rambam. Why this should be set up as, why a person could bring a carbon at a certain time is not the problem that the Rambam and the Mara was discussing. You see? Yeah, but the emphasis on Kabbonis, that's what disturbed the Rambam, that Aveda and Karbam should be tied in a constant way. And Tefillah, Migdash was Tefillah also, it's from the Spawa of the Migdash. So why this should be tied in together, this is what bothered the Rambam. In other words, that it should be instituted as a part of serving God, a constant format of serving God. That's what bothered the Rambam, you see? Why an individual brought a specific time, why Noach brought a carbon at that time, the Rambam is not denying that there's a possibility for an individual at a given time to bring a carbon, not denying that. But the problem he's concerned with is why the Torah, he's speaking over there in Tamei Mitzvahs, why the Torah insisted on setting up such a system of Aveda, a system of Kabbonis. That's what bothers the Rambam. You understand? But to say, for me to say what why Noach brought a carbon, or why Hevel brought a carbon according to the Rambam, I don't have enough information to say anything on that, so that's why, you know what I mean, it would be total conjecture. But I'm just differentiating between that type of a korban which the Rambam would admit exists, that an individual at a certain time could bring a korban. But the Rambam's problem is not that. If Migdash was it, a person could bring a korban when at a certain time, it's a different story. But the Rambam says, why was it tied in? An institution was set up where you tie in tefillah and korban. What's the purpose of that? See, what's that? That's what bothers the Rambam in the Mirror. Okay. He's speaking in the area of time and mitzvahs. Let's get back to the Maimar Chazal. All right? What was the Maimar Chazal that we started with? Al Shlosh Dvar Moel Amoimed. Okay? So now we have to formulate. Now let's formulate the Maimar. How would you formulate the Maimar? So it'll depend whether you'll take the Ramban's path, which seems to be Rashi's path. Because Rashi isolates Avodah, he says Karbonis. Or the Ramban's path, the Ramban universalizes carbon. Alright? According to Ramban, carbon is all the mitzvahs. Because all the mitzvahs are a means to bring a person to Shmiras HaMitzvahs. Shmiras Mitzvot Vehem HaKarbonis, he says. All these are means to what? To bring a person to raising a person's emotions to the level where he could serve God through his intellect. All right, that's the purpose. Yeah. So according to the Rambam, what's the approach? You have three things: Torah, right? Means that's the purpose. The purpose of the existence of the world is Torah. Avoida and Gemilas Chasarim. Avoida represents the mitzvahs, which are a means to the perfection of the intellect, right? And then Gemilas Chasarim. What's Gemilas Chasarim? Gemilas Chasarim is the Bein Adam L'Chaverai. Bein Adam L'Chaverai. Torah's knowledge. Knowledge per se, right? That nobody argues on that one. Now the thing is like this. So we have to say there's a difference when we say that the world stands on these three things. There's a difference between the way it stands on each thing. You know what I mean? It means its existence is dependent on these things, but it's not dependent precisely the same way. For instance, in Torah, what does it mean is dependent upon Torah? Dependent upon Torah means that's the purpose. That's the purpose. Anything that exists in this world exists only because it's God's will that it should exist. And if His will has in it a certain purpose, if that purpose isn't satisfied, then that thing ceases to exist. Right? It ceases to exist. Okay. That's one. Torah means that's the purpose. The purpose of it is Torah. So that's without that there is no existence because there is no objective. There's no purpose. If there's no purpose, then God's will can't relate to it, so it doesn't exist. What about Avoda? Avoda is a little bit different. What about Avoda? Alright, let's take a coin to the Rambam. Coin to the Rambam doesn't mean the purpose was Avoda. Coin to the Rambam, what does it mean? It means it's a necessary means. It's a necessary means. Right? So, you have to have, it's a necessary means for perfection. It's a medium. That's not the objective, but it's a necessary means. Okay? And what is Gemilas Chasarim, according to Rambam? What is Gemilas Chasarim? Gemilas Chasarim is because since one is the Shmiras HaMitzvahs in general is insofar as an individual requires this means for his perfection. But an individual also requires a society. And for society, you have to have Gemilas Chasarim. Alright? So, actually, the objective, the purpose is really Torah, but Torah cannot be brought about without two other things. Without a means for the perfection of the individual, and without the individual having to be able to exist in a society. Right? That's basically what the Maimer is, according to the Rambam. Alright? According to the Ramban, what would it be? Torah is the same thing. The objective is Torah. What about Avoda? What is Avoda? Avoda, according to the Ramban, is tshuva. Tshuva, right? Let me define it, right? It's tshuva. The ability for a person to recognize domai tachas domi, right? This is what I'm really chayav of. The ability for a person to stop and reflect and change his whole ideas concerning his existence, his purposes, his actions, right? So that's what Avodah is, according to the Ramban. And the Gemilas Chasanim, again, is the same, social order. The only difference between the Rambam and the Ramban is what Avaida is. What Avaida is. According to the Rambam, what is Avaida? Avaida represents the necessary means of perfection in order to reach Chachma. According to the Ramban, Avaida is what, according to the Ramban? Avaida is tshuva. Is tshuva. Okay. That's the difference, yes? Yeah, according to the Rambam, it's the sublimation of the emotions. That's what's necessary. In order to have, a person has chachma, but in order to have chachma, he also has to have what? He also has to be able to deal with his emotions to reach the level. He has to be able to sublimate his emotions. That's avoda. Avoda represents sublimation of the emotions, according to the Rambam.
Even though
I just want to mention parenthetically, even though we answered the kashas that the Ramban asked on the Rambam, we're not in any way rejecting the Ramban's interpretation of kapara. It's a lot of rayas for what he says. Dami tachas dami, and the basic idea in kapara. I mean, it's a very good reason, very good time. All right, now let's get back. Let's take it step by step. What would the Ramban answer if somebody would ask him, "What about tshuva? What about tshuva?" So what would the Rambam answer? If somebody asked the Rambam, no, don't make the mistake of thinking this is included in the specific mitzvahs. So mitzvahs over here means a general idea of mitzvahs. It doesn't mean it's specific. When you take out Gemilas Chasanim from the mitzvahs, it means that aside from being a mitzvah and specific, this is a universal which is necessary. You understand what I mean? It's not just an ordinary mitzvah. It's a universal. There's mitzvahs in general, and then there's a specific universal, philosophic universal. This stands out as a philosophic universal. But it's not not just, of course, included. Everything's included in mitzvahs, yeah. Now, so Torah also. So, do you know what it means like this? You could have just said mitzvahs, that's it. Now, I mean, that's no kasha. But if you ask the Rambam, why didn't you take tshuva? Why didn't you single out tshuva as being a process which is essential to man? What would the Rambam say? What would the Rambam say? Rambam would say, no, I've included it already. Where did I include it? That's an avoda. Avoda, the purpose of avoda is for a person to be able to work with his emotions. The emotions separate him between himself and his maker. So therefore, the only way that he could do it is the things that's necessary to do is through mitzvahs, through tshuva. All these things are all included, you see. Are included. It's necessary for the person to direct his energies to the right source. You see? That's no problem. All right. Now, what about... So that would answer the Rambam. Now, what about the Ramban? Why does the Ramban single out tshuva? Why does the Ramban single out tshuva? Tshuva is the only process that we have, is the main process that a person always uses to perfect himself. That's tshuva, constantly. Tshuva isn't just a mitzvah once a year. That's what you said last time. It's a part of the process of perfection. Necessary for perfection. Now, the reason why the Ramban singles out tshuva is like this. You see... The Ramban, the memra really is the three things that are indispensable for Kiyam Olam. That's what the memra is, right? So the Ramban says like this. According to the Ramban, what does tshuva really represent? Tshuva represents one thing. Tshuva really, what is the essence of tshuva? The essence of tshuva is what? Is hakaras hachet and charata alo avar and kabbalah alo osid, right? Basically what it means is the breakdown of the ego. That's what it means. For a person to look at himself and say chatasi, look at himself and recognize the difficulty in doing tshuva is one difficulty. The one thing that stands in the way of a person doing tshuva is his ego. That's what the difficulty is. Because he can't recognize that he made a mistake. It's a very difficult thing. It's a certain powerful emotion. The most powerful emotion of man is the ego. So really tshuva, what does tshuva represent? Tshuva represents the ability for man to break his ego. So the Ramban maintains that without that ability, the world couldn't exist. That's what the Ramban wants to point out. You see, Torah Avoda Gemilas Chasanim means Torah means the life of knowledge. Yes, life of knowledge. But the life of knowledge alone would never be enough if man didn't have the ability to break his ego. That's Avoda. You see, and then of course you have Gemilas Chasanim goes quite there. Gemilas Chasanim, you need a social structure. Fine. According to the Ramban, you see, it's more specific. It's more specific according to the Ramban. Ramban is isolating the things that are necessary, indispensable for a Kiyam Olam. So you have the knowledge, then you have the breakdown of the ego, the life of knowledge according to the Ramban, the breakdown of the ego, and then you have the societal structure. According to the Rambam, it's more general. According to the Rambam, the difference would be in what the term Torah means. According to the Rambam, Torah means knowledge per se, abstract knowledge and abstract. So Torah, abstract knowledge. What's the way for now? The practical application of that knowledge is through a certain means. That's through the mitzvahs, kabbonis, the idea of the sublimation of the instincts. Okay, fine. That's according to the Rambam. You have knowledge, then the practical application through sublimation of the instincts. That's the and then the societal structure. Fine. That's the Rambam's way. The Ramban is Torah doesn't mean just abstract knowledge. Torah means the life of Torah. The life of Torah. But the life of Torah, for the life of in order to be able to live properly, there's one indispensable format. Torah alone isn't enough. You give a person a system of Torah, it's not enough. Give him the right system to live by, it's not enough. He must have the ability to break down the ego. You see? It's more specific according to the Ramban. That's the way the Ramban learns. You understand what I mean? According to the Ramban, it's isolating the factors that are necessary for Kiyum Olam. So Torah is, the life of Torah, fine, but there's only one ability you have to have with that. The life of Torah would never be enough if a man didn't have the ability to break down his own ego. That's tshuva. And then, they say, besides that, you need a societal structure. Those are the three, according to the Ramban, according to the Ramban. Yes. I don't know if we're going any further than this. Yeah. See, the Ramban, you might say, is more in psychological terms. What psychological faculty is indispensable for a human existence? The psychological faculty of being able to break down one's own ego. That's the way the Ramban learns. According to the Rambam, it's more philosophical terms. What philosophically is necessary? Philosophically, you say, generally, is necessary for man to be able to sublimate his instincts. It's not speaking about a specific psychological mechanism. You understand what I mean? Rashi agreed that process matana, but the Rambam points out in addition that it's not schar. Why is the Rambam so intent on telling us that it doesn't mean schar? What do you say? Why? What's the difference? It means that you shouldn't. It's okay to work for schar. It would seem. It's okay to work for schar. I mean, it's the same thing. It's the same violation. If you say you work for schar, it's just as bad. What's the difference? I mean, what's the difference? Technicality. I mean, I shouldn't work for a bonus. I should work for the regular pay. It's the process bonus, and schar is regular pay. And why is schar any better? Yeah. All right. Yeah, schar. The Torah does mention, right. The Torah mentions schar, the mitzvahs. Where? L'man yarichan yamecha. L'man yarichan yamecha. Okay. All right. But I would say like this. I'd say, yeah, it doesn't mean that has to be the motivation. You see? It doesn't mean...
Yeah.
He's kabeis avicha v'simecha l'man yarichan yamecha. So l'man, in order, that should be the reason why you do it. Yeah. It does pose a problem. I mean, it does pose a problem. But then, if you're going to say, you're still not going to get rid of the problem. Why? Because, what are you going to say? You're going to tell me that it's okay for me to respect my parents in order that I should have a long life. Right? I mean, that would be all right. Isn't that also a manas b'kala prath? Wouldn't that be included in the memra of Antignus Yishsechai? Right? I mean, what's the difference? Arichas Yom would be okay, and other things wouldn't be alright. I mean, what's the difference? Arichas Yom is basically people want to live long. Why? It's a physical desire, instinctual desire. What difference would there be? Alright?
Yeah.
You can say like this. If the terrorist says, like, let's take... the case that was mentioned just before about the Kabbalah Vichlas Vimecha. The person I'll respect my parents in order that I should live an extra few years. Right? Okay. What is that called? Schar or Pras? That's Pras? Why is that Pras? I mean,
no.
The idea of Schar is an exchange. I can't say you could have the idea of Schar without the concept of exchange. I'm getting something for something else. Right? Now over here, what is the... Why is that okay? It would seem it's not all right. Okay. Yeah. Because I work, I don't inherently receive something. It's an exchange, not inherent in the action. It's an action which justice demands. I did one action. It results. No, not by the nature. It's not the nature of working doesn't produce money. The nature of working is that in this system, in this society, system of justice, he owes you, he has to pay something now. It's not inherent. So it's a bit. I'll tell you that. So it's a big. It's a big question. It's a big question. Really, if the Rambam wouldn't have underlined that word pras, I mean, we wouldn't have made a big issue out of it. Pras, schar, same thing. Go further. But the Rambam did underline it for some reason. It says ki aschar hu sheinasim bedin. V'amar, all right, sheinasim bedin. Why did he? What's the pshat? All right, Silverstein wants to say something. Good. What he's saying is like this. Let me explain a little what he's saying. He's saying like this. He's saying that schar is impossible. It's totally impossible. Why? Because schar means that I have a claim on somebody else. I have a claim. Justice. There's a claim of justice demands. There's a system of justice, the concept of justice that we have, and that concept of justice dictates that such and such take place. You work for the man for a day, now justice dictates that this man give you something in return. What does it mean, give you something in return? It means you've benefited him, now he has to benefit you, correct? What he's saying is, with relationship to God, such a situation is impossible. Such a situation is impossible. It is impossible for us to say that, okay, I've done this much, such and such, now you, God, owe us in return to repay us with such and such. That's impossible. Why? Because with relationship to God, you can never be a benefactor. So you can never be a... There is no justice. There is no... Besides which, and I think we've mentioned this a few times, there is no justice. The idea of justice cannot be applied to God. See, the idea of justice, as Phil went through once, the idea of justice can apply in a closed system. If you have a system, so you could say it's just, justice means that the system is set up in a certain way. But with relationship to God, man can never have a claim. Who's justice who? I mean, God is the source of the universe. He isn't in a system in which he operates on justice. Justice is only possible within a certain system, within a framework, you can have justice. But the idea of justice cannot exist outside the framework. In other words, you can't say it's just for God to have to... God owes us this and that. He doesn't owe us anything. I mean, he created us, he can destroy us. There's no system that he's operating under that he has to be just. His justice is different. When we say God is just, it has nothing to do with the idea. We went through this at length in another time. I don't want to go through it again. I know it's a bit of an abstract idea. But I'm just trying to, those who remember, the basic idea was that there's no concept of justice with relation to God. There isn't. The only reason we call God just is not because he has to abide by a system. He doesn't have to abide by a system. I mean, you could create anything you want and it wouldn't be unjust, you see. We have to abide by justice because we are created by God, and God put us in, he gave us a certain sphere of operation. If we break that sphere, it's unjust. Our existence is justified by a certain framework that he created. But he's not in any framework. He doesn't have to abide by any laws. There's no... you understand what I mean? So there's no such thing as justice with relationship to God. Moreover, we cannot be benefactors of God. We cannot say that we demand something of God in exchange because we've benefited him. That's an impossibility. It's an impossibility. I mean, what? I worked for you, God, for today. Now you owe me this. I mean, well, what? What did you do for me? There's nothing you can do for me. It's psukim. I mean, psukim and Eve. Is there anything a man can do to help God? I mean, this is ridiculous. So there is no relationship here. There is no relationship in which justice would demand that we receive something from God in return. You see? There is no such possibility. When we say God is just, what we mean is that he is perfect. Perfection. His perfection is what we would call just. In our minds, we call it just. But it's not. He's not abiding by a system of justice. He's not bound by any system. You see? He whose perfection dictates that he deals with his creatures in the way that satisfies them, because that satisfies their needs, because that would be an imperfection to create something that can't exist. That would be an imperfection. If God would make a creature that would live a miserable life and die, you see, that would be an imperfection, because it would be an imperfection insofar as he's a creator, because he didn't create something which exists properly. You see, that's what we call that just. God is just. He gives each creature what it needs. But it's not really justice, it's perfection. It's a point we went through it, I think it's on tape, at length. I know it's a bit of an abstract point. If you catch it, good, yes. Therefore, we're saying like this, that why it cannot say, Al tiyu kavodim, al meshamshim es harav, al menas lekabel schar, is because to say the word schar, you see, to say the word schar would be impossible with relationship to God. It would be blasphemy. You'd be saying, really, that I earned something. I earned the day's wages from God. God owes me now something. I did something, now he owes me something. That's an impossibility. You can't do anything for God. It's impossible. You can't do anything for him. Since you can't do anything for him, he doesn't owe you anything. You can't take God to a din terah. So he says it's bedin. He says, she nothing bedin. But then you can't demand anything from God. There's no such thing as din demanding from God. And don't make the mistake of on Rosh Hashanah and Kippur, you say bedin. Over there, bedin doesn't mean that we... See, over there, bedin means something else. It's true, it says that you use the term din. But the term din, you have to understand, when we use certain terms in order to convey certain basic ideas to us, doesn't mean that this is the philosophical idea, an underlying philosophical idea. You see, it doesn't mean it's underlying philosophy. It means, bedin over there means according to the way God happens to work. That's what it means, according to the way he works. This and such is the case. But as a demand, the demand is impossible. You understand what I'm saying? In other words, God, we know God works in a certain way. That since he is perfection, so therefore when he creates something, he makes sure it has what it needs. If he punishes somebody, it's not that he's harming them, but on the contrary, he's perfecting them, he's doing something better for them. So he works in a certain way. So if a person deserves to be healthy, the din, it means that according to the way God operates, that he deserves it. But it doesn't mean that you have rights, that you can make claims, actual claims against God. You understand? Like, in other words, you understand, like a plaintiff. I mean, you can't be a plaintiff against, it's an impossibility. A plaintiff against, when you're a plaintiff and a defendant, it has to be going to the judge. There's a certain system, an external system that you have to refer to. The judge will tell you whether he's right or wrong. I mean, you're going and making the plaint against, is a crime against society, a crime against something. Who's God's crime? Who can God perform a crime against? Against who? It's an impossibility. Think about it, you think. Yeah. The idea of bris bein odom lamakom, bris merely means a universal. That's all it means. A bris means that it is God's will to set up a certain universal of action. His wisdom dictates there will be a certain universal of action. That's what a bris means. If there was no bris, then everything would be dependent upon particulars. Everything would, instead, a bris means a universal rather than a particular decisions. You see? That's what a bris means. In other words, if you don't have a bris, then it means that you're always, everything that occurs is going to be based upon the last action. Every action will be judged individually. Bris means a universal idea. That's what a bris means. That's basically the idea of bris. It's a universal form of action. God universally will say, unilaterally, to say that this is the way it's going to be. That's it. It's the creation of a universal. Yes. But the universal is not in regard to their physical universal and their ethical universal. It's an ethical universal, yes. What's the pshat? The pshat is that it couldn't have said, Al tiyu kavodim l'shamshim harav v'menas lekabel schar, because schar is non-existent. You can't have schar between... It would be profanity to say that there's schar between me and God. I mean, I did him work, now he owes me this. I mean, there's no such thing. No such thing. See? I wouldn't have made an issue out of it. One more you. But the Rambam does make an issue out of it. I'm going on the Rambam. The Rambam here says pras was used in specific to differentiate from schar. And the question we asked was why? And the answer is because since he's being specific in his language, he is trying to tell you something. That schar is completely outruled. But pras is a possibility. He says, that you shouldn't do either. You see? That's the pshat. At any rate, that's clear. You see, in any type, justice in any way, if you define it even like Arnie Zucker mentioned before, in the Platonic way, and it has to be a system. There's a system that the injustice is the fact that you're moving out of the frame of your frame of reference within a certain system. You see? You have a certain sphere with which you can operate. The injustice is to move out of that sphere. Now, in that sense, there has to be such a setup. God is not in such a setup. Okay. Let's go further. Because you might serve God. Why? Because what? Because you'll feel that he will be good to you. He'll be good to you. What does it mean he'll be good to you? Just, it's true he doesn't owe you anything, but the fact is that maybe you'll feel that, oh, if I do this, then he will be good to me. That's his nature, is to be good to me, if I do this.
You shouldn't do it for that purpose. Okay?
Shouldn't do it for that purpose.
V'omnam avdu kavodim she'ena mekavim la'atova v'loy l'gemilas chesed. Rotza bazeh she'yu ovdim me'ava kimo she'amarnu perek yud mi'sanhedrin.
Like we explained in the 10th paragraph of Sanhedrin, the Pirush Mishnah is there. Alright? So what does the Rambam say?
Now, does the Rambam take care of the redundancy? The fact that it has to have the statement both in the positive and the negative? What do you say? There wasn't a statement, there's two things. One is that you shouldn't serve God for the purpose, for an extraneous purpose. Extraneous reward, right? That's one. And the second one is, but you should serve God like an eved. You should serve God like an eved that doesn't look for anything, any benefit coming to him. You see? Ratzah Bazet around says, Sheyu Ovdin Me'ahava. Alright?
That's a very good shot. So, yes. Pshat, yes.
Pshat is, you see, there's two different possibilities. I could do an activity because God will reward me, you see? But I could do an activity because the activity itself results in its own reward. The activity has its own reward, you see? That's a possibility. Like, I keep the mitzvahs. Look, God is very wise. And since God is very wise, so he gave us a system which is beneficial to us. Right? Now, since he gave us a system which is beneficial to us, so I do it for my own benefit. Right? 1 second. No. Hold on. 1 second. I do it for the purpose, for the benefit that I get out of it. The benefit I get out of it. Right? That is another possibility. I could serve God because of a benefit which he bestows upon me. Or I could serve God because of a benefit which results from my actions. Right? Yeah, natural benefit. God is a good doctor. He gave us a good prescription for life. And therefore, you should do this because this you'll have a very good life if you follow this prescription. He knows the best, the happiest life. Right? Ah. Then he says, no. Hevu kavodim ha-mishamshim es-arav. Hevu kavodim ha-mishamshim es-arav. Shelo ha-manas l'kava pras. What does that mean? What idea does that convey? If an eved works for his master, you see, and he doesn't consider any benefit that the master can bestow upon him, right? The eved also doesn't consider any benefit that's going to result to him from those actions either. That's why the mushal is a good one. See, the eved does not consider any benefit he doesn't do it because he's going to receive any benefit from it. Do you understand what I mean? But why does he do it? So why does he do it? Because he loves the master. Because every action is motivated by the love for the master that he senses, and he's just happy to see the master have something. You see? That's the Eved Hamashamash Rav Shaloyal Manafat HaLapras. So what Antignus Ishsechi says is like this, that first of all, you should not serve God because God will bestow a benefit upon you. Number one, but there still is another possibility. What's the other possibility? That you'll serve God because of the benefit that you'll get from the actions themselves. The actions are good. The person takes a prescription, doctor's prescription. Why does he do it? He doesn't do it for the doctor, right? He does it for himself. The action leads to a result. You see? But he says no. He says the ultimate level is what? What's the ultimate level? Where he does it, that's what the Rambam says. You see, the Rambam says like this. He says, Ratza bazeshi yu ovdin me'ahava. That's why he added the last part. Having mishamshin esarav shaloy al manas l'kal pras. You see? Shiyu ovdin me'ahava. Ovdin me'ahava means that you don't even care for any benefit which you receive from it, personally. You follow what I mean? In other words, the point is like this, that that personal benefit should not come into the picture at all. At all. That's what it means. You do not have no concern for the self. Question is, how is that possible? How is such a thing possible? The answer is like this, really. The answer is such a thing is not possible at the outset. There is no question about it. At the outset, it's impossible for a person to be Oved Me'ava, just initially, to be Oved Me'ava. It's impossible. Because what motivates an individual? What motivates an individual is a certain good that they must be after. They must be after something.
Why do you do an action? There must be something you're looking for in return. Nobody just does an action without any purpose, you see? So the good that the person looks for can either be a good, an extraneous good, one which is extraneous, one which is bestowed upon him by God, an extraneous thing. That is the lowest level. The next level is where a person does something because of a good that results from his action, naturally, you see? But what happens is like this. The highest level is where he does it because of the action itself. That's the highest level. That's the level of ahava. But no one can start from ahava. It's an impossibility. It's like Einstein says that thought starts out as a means for an end. You think because you have something in mind. But the result is that it becomes an end in itself. What he means is like this, that the process of thought is so, becomes so so enjoyable. The process itself, which first started out as a means, becomes so enjoyable that the person forgets about what he wanted to do and he enjoys the thought itself, you see? But he could never start that way. He couldn't start that way because what motivation would he have to do it, you see? Now, the same thing is over here. Perfection, a person cannot begin with such perfection. That's why you have like this. That's why you have the positive. You have there for the first the negative, then the positive. The negative is like this: don't al tiyuka in the road for perfection. Al tiyuka varma masham shemasarav al manas lakal bras. Don't do it for that reason. That's not even a beginning. Shouldn't even start that way. It's a nonsensical idea. Now, how could a person start then? There's only way that a person starts the middle road, that a person could perceive that. Look, God is the one. He's the creator. He's the one that knows our nature best and knows how we will be happiest, and therefore we must assume that the system which he gave us is one in which we will achieve the greatest happiness. So therefore I'm doing it for my own happiness, doing it for myself, you see? But in the process of doing it, suddenly he becomes enraptured with what he's doing, and in that process he forgets about himself, and then he does it. That's me'ava. See, me'ava is where the self is completely obliterated. The whole purpose of the self is completely, he forgets about himself. The self seems unimportant. That's basically the idea that Va'ish Moshe Anav Mikol Adam Pnei Kol Adam. Why? Because Moshe Rabbeinu was the higher a person is in perfection, the less reflection there is upon the self. Because all he reflects upon is God. So the greater Oved me'ava, the less energy there is flowing towards the self-importance, you see. So therefore the self is diminished to the greatest degree, you see. That's why he phrased it that way. Don't do this. This is not a road to perfection. So he gave two rules, he said. He showed the road which is no good. That's Altiyah Kavadam Hashem Shem Zerav Al Natskal Pras. That's no good. Then he showed the perfect road. That's Hevu Kavadam Hashem Shem Zerav Shalom Natskal Pras. That's the perfection. But there's an intermediary road which he didn't mention because it's necessary. You see, it's necessary in order for a person to begin, in order to start to initiate his activity, he has to have that middle road, you see. But the ultimate is Hevu Kavadav Masham Shem Sarav Shalom Anasach HaPras, which means that he's enraptured by the activity itself. Like the Rambam says, Kichayla Sahavani. Kichayla Sahavani means that a person senses, he feels in his heart, and he feels an emotional love towards God. He's drawn towards God. It's like a love affair. He feels a tremendous force drawing him there. It's the same type of emotion, a certain feeling. He can't go to sleep at night because he can't wait till he wakes up in the morning till he can start the activity again. The activity itself, he's just enraptured with the activity of contemplating God. That's Ahavas Hashem. That's the idea of Ahava. That's why it's called Ahava. That's why Shlomo Melech in Shir HaShirim equates it to a love affair. Because it's something which takes up so much of the person's energy. He's just saying the same thing, you see. But the idea is, of course, the idea is that the activity itself becomes what draws upon his psyche to such a tremendous degree. He forgets about himself. He's not concerned with himself anymore. He doesn't care. In a love relationship, where one person hears the other one's in danger, he'll run, go, do anything, give his life. Why? Because the self is why. Why will a person even sacrifice their life sometimes? You see, because they forget about themselves. You find sometimes a parent will sacrifice their life for a child, love of the child, or go, they'll destroy themselves. Why? How can they do it? The answer is because the object of their love
involves their psychic energy to such a great degree that they forget about themselves. They forget about themselves. They don't care if they die. You see? That's the idea of Hevel Kavodam Hashem Shemes Harav Shaloy Amanas L'Kav Pras. So the Rambam emphasizes, the Rambam underlines, he says like this. He says it means that, he says, Kolaymar, Rotzabazash, you oev de me'ava. That's what it means, oev de me'ava. That's why the statement, you have the positive and the negative. Okay? Alright. Yes. He's mentioning a very good point. The Rambam in the 10th parak does say that he mentions that how do you begin a child? He says, how do you begin a child on learning? He says, you give him a pras. He says, that's what it comes out. He says, first you give him, food that he wants, good food. He gets older, you give him nice clothing, you give him money, that's the highest, level in the physical. Then after that, he says, then the person has to switch for a different purpose. But the memory over here was not taught. Apparently, what the memory is, Amanas L'Kav Pras is a very low level. I mean, it's a very low level. That's an infantile level, an infantile thing. So the Antignus Yisocho was telling people that they should remove themselves from this infantile state. That's what he meant. Yeah, they should remove themselves. Yeah, that level is the lowest level. That's what he was telling them. And of course, the Rambam saying it's impossible with a child any other way. See? It might even not be necessary means, but it certainly isn't any degree of perfection. He was saying that you should remove yourself from that infantile state, from that infantile idea that you have. That's what he was saying to them. The turning. Now we're up to the next point in Gimel. Vihi mara shamayim alechem. Let's take a look at Rashi. Rashi says, "Lefi she'ein schar mitzvahs bo'olam hazeh, she'nema asher anechi mitzavcho hayom." Alright, so what does Rashi say? What Rashi is saying is like this. Rashi is saying that Antignus Ish Sechai was really addressing himself to a specific problem. What was the problem? The problem was that people who are religious notice that evil befalls them or others who are also religious, and because of this they lose their Morah Shamayim, because they maintain that God is not concerned with man, and there is no such thing as Schar Mitzvahs. So since there's no Schar Mitzvahs, so therefore they become Kofrim. So Rashi learns that that's what the memory essentially is. And then you won't deny God, because you won't have the problem that you see a person is religious and evil befalls him, because you'll know that ein schar mitzvahs b'olam hazeh. That's the way Rashi learns. That's what he means. Okay? It's really like the story in the Gemara in Kedushin. You have a Gemara? Yeah. The Gemara is in Kedushin of Lama Tesman Beis. Umole dar she achal haikrok, Rabbi Yaakov barbrate lechata. If Acha would have learned the pasuk, this pasuk, like Rabbi Yaakov, he never would have sinned. What was the case? The case, the well-known case of the Gemara in Kedushin. Harei sham alay ovid. His father told him, "Alei labira vaveli geizlois, go up on the roof and get me the pigeons. Vola labira v'sholach esaim v'not l'sabanim. Where's his long life? He died on his return trip. And the Torah says, "Leman yitav loch varachta yamin." Both mitzvahs, right? So the Gemara says, "Leman yitav loch lelam shikulei toiv." Alright, it has nothing to do with it. It's not a reference to this world. Okay, so the Gemara says that if Acha would have learned the pasuk the same way, then he wouldn't have become an apikaris. Why? Because he saw the same incident, and that's why he saw that exact incident, and some say that he saw the tongue of Chutzpah Sanatogamon dragged by a chazar. So he said,
They killed chutzpahs on the Turgoman. They cut out his tongue and they let a chazah drag it. So he said, Lishna the chutzpahs. And so he said, like it says, Pasha hipik margolias ilachech afar. He said he couldn't tolerate such injustice. So therefore he denied God. Okay, that's the Gemara. So the member of Antigonus Ishocho is really the same statement as the Gemara over here, which is that a person shouldn't expect reward in this world. There's no reward in this world, and therefore there's no need to get upset. If you see that there's if you see the what? That there's no, that a person lives a righteous life and some evil befalls him. There's no reward in this world. That's what he says. But that's what he says. But he says a little sharper. He says you shouldn't be like those who serve God for reward. What he means is that what he's saying is like this. He's telling you why these people turn away from God. The reason why these people turn away from God is because their motivation is a bad one. That's what he's telling you. The motivation is a bad one. The motivation to do to keep yadas is because they really are looking for some reward. That's why when they see that there is no reward, that's why they leave it, because their whole main motivation is broken. You see? That's what he's telling you. That's what he's saying. Alright? He doesn't say it as a statement. That he's not telling you a philosophical statement. That's Chaim Mitzvah Bahai Al-Maleka. He says you should be this type of a person and then you'll have Mara Shemayim, which means that the reason why people deny God is because of this motivation, because they have the wrong motivation. That's what he's saying. Okay. That's right, because if the motivation was for another reason, not to receive any reward, so then no matter what happens, why shouldn't he do it? Why shouldn't he continue doing it? If the reason why he's doing it is because of it's a natural result of his Avas Hashem, so then nothing can stop that. There's no reason to stop. The only reason to stop is when there's something that I thought I'm getting something in return, and then that thing is taken away. So then I stop. But otherwise, I could have a kasha. I have a lot of kashas. But the fact remains that my motivation is still there to do it, so why should I stop? You see, if it's really because of Avas Hashem, then there's no reason to stop. No reason why I should have stopped. So that's the case. So when Acher stopped, so it meant that there was something wrong in his motivation. What he's saying is that the reason why, if a person, for instance, is turned off from the address because of the concentration camps, you see? So the underlying premise is that what stops him is that his motivation is the wrong one. His motivation is that I'm doing this in order to protect me from certain physical evils. You see? But if that is not a factor in his motivation at all, then why should this stop him from continuing to abide by a system which he recognizes as the correct one? It has nothing to do with it. It's only if the assumption is that through this process he will avoid certain harm, then it's a problem. Yeah. Now the question is like this. The question is, if we say Schar Mitzvah by Al-Maleka, so isn't that the same thing as saying that the whole world is chaos here? There's no Hashgacha, because Schar Mitzvah by Al-Maleka. So therefore, if I do something good, there's no God doesn't recognize it. There's no reward, and therefore there's no purpose in there's no purpose in doing it in terms of God's recognition. I mean, never mind reward, but it means there's nothing to do. It's outside the sphere of his recognition. So, which means that the whole world is chaos. There's no Hashgacha. Why should I daven? Why should I misbal? Why should I... It's all a waste of time. It's kind of mitzvah by Al-Maleka. Yeah, we mentioned this already once before. It's on the tape. The Gemara, they went through the Gemara. Schar mitzvah, what's the machlekes? It's a schar mitzvah by Rabbi Yaakov. Whether it's schar mitzvah by Al-Maleka or schar mitzvah by Al-Maika. What we said was like this. That there is no doubt. The whole Torah says that if you do this and this, then you'll have such and such a reward. The psukim of the Torah. After all through the Torah. So you can't say that there is no hashgacha. That's impossible. But the question was like this. The question was, you see, insofar as there is Ashgacha definitely, there's no question that the Ashgacha is worked out in an individual way so that a person should be able to act, to live in the best way for himself in terms of Shemiras HaMitzvos. You see? In other words, if a person lives properly, so then he's rewarded with the fact that he can live in the best possible circumstance so that he can perfect the soul to a greater degree. There's no question about that. The question is like this. The question is, insofar as a person receives pleasure from this world and it does not affect his soul, either positively or negatively. That's the question. The question is, in such a situation, does HaKadosh Baruch Hu give a person a reward in this world? Is there a reward in this world? That's the question. You see, because insofar as the other thing is concerned, that we never know, which is the best way. Which is the best way for a person? Is it better for a person to live now or to die? We don't know. We don't know. Maybe it's better for him to die now. Maybe that's the best thing for the situation. But insofar as actual reward, which means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives a person enjoyment in this world as a reward for his... For his good deeds, this is what Antignus Ishsechi rejects. You see? Now, therefore, you could never say, well, how come this person was righteous and he had such a high and he suffered? Can't say that. Because the only thing you could say is that the person didn't live, the only objection you'd be able to have is that the person didn't live in a way that was the best thing for his soul. That, I mean, we don't know. That's impossible for us to gauge. But whether he had certain pleasures in this world, that is not a factor. That's what he says. It means that there is no physical enjoyment in this world which is a repayment in any way for any good deeds that a person does. You see, that's what he means. He doesn't mean that it's a chaotic world. He doesn't mean there's no Ashgacha. Definitely there is Ashgacha. One of the factors in Ashgacha is, like the Rambam says, that everybody agrees, that the purpose of the Ashgacha is so that a person who lives according to the right way can continue to live that way. He doesn't have to be bothered with making money, with other problems in this world. He's free to spend his time in Torah. That's the biggest bracha. That's the biggest bracha. There is no personal pleasure. The pleasure per se that he receives is not in any way a reward. That's an accidental thing. That's what he means. All right. So therefore, what he means to say is that you should never ever look, whenever a person does a mitzvah, you should never look for any type of physical benefit. You see, or to avoid any physical harm, because that has nothing to do with it. The only thing is that, of course, God will supply him with the best possible situation. And that depends on what God decides is the best possible situation, but he shouldn't feel in any way that a specific physical pleasure, a physical good, a physical enjoyment is in store for him because he did a certain action. There's no shaykhus, because in this world you do not get repaid for your good deeds. There's no repayment in this world. You do not get. What he means is he doesn't mean there is no ashgacha in this world. He means there is no repayment in this world for anything good that a person does. The good cannot be translated into this worldly terms. You understand what I mean? It can't be translated into these terms. That's what he means. Really, what he's saying an extremely important statement, that a person should in no way... The reason why people lose their Maror Shamayim is because of one thing, because in deep down, they expect some type of translation of their actions, of their good deeds, into some physical enjoyment. It's like the Rambam says with Eev, also, that Eev was a traditional Jew, he says, like a traditional Jew to begin with. What is a traditional Jew? He enjoys everything. He enjoys davening, he enjoys mitzvahs, he enjoys making kiddush with his family, he enjoys his house, he enjoys a lot of things. Shabbos is nice, take a walk, take a stroll, enjoyable, nice, wear nice clothes, you go to a nice shul, everything's pleasant, these type of pleasantries. But these type of pleasantries are mistaken for the real good, you see. That was Eve's problem. He felt that this is what I should get in return for being just. I should have all these enjoyments, these nice enjoyments. Nothing bad, he didn't want anything bad. Didn't want to kill anybody. Didn't want to have orgies. Didn't want to have anything wild. But just nice, these pleasantries, little enjoyments. But he felt deep down that he should, these enjoyments should be secured for him because of the, because of his good deeds. You see? That was his mistake. Because the, you cannot expect anything. That's why he says, I'll tell you, Kavod HaMashiach Mesorah. V'imar Shemayim Aleichem. If you, the reason why people lose their Mar Shemayim is because deep down, they're expecting what they do to be translated into some type of physical enjoyment. You see? And that is wrong. That expectation is false. Because you can't translate it into physical terms. It's a different type of enjoyment. Like the Rambam says in the Pirshei Mishnayos, there is no such thing as a spiritual enjoyment in this world. No such thing. Because everything we do, even the enjoyment of learning, is not a spiritual enjoyment. Because it works on psychological principles. Everything here works on psychological principles. Physical. The only thing we have is the activity. We only have in this world an activity, which when our soul is separated from our bodies, this activity will have with it an attending enjoyment which is different. You see, which is different, completely different. But in this world, there's only physical enjoyments. The only thing we can say is that insofar as a person, even the Avas Hashem that we have is based on a physical type of a thing. Well, we can only say that that situation is a situation which turns the soul to the greatest degree towards the good. That's what it means. In other words, if a person has that, if a person lives that way and senses that Avas Hashem, then you know that his soul is turned towards the good to the highest degree, and therefore he will receive the highest enjoyment in the next world. But it's not that particular emotion. According to Rashi, that's the pshat. That's the meaning of the statement. Okay? How is it different than the Gemara and Kedushin that Tzchar Mitzvah by Amaleka? It's different in this sense. In other words, it seems like a repetition of the Gemara and Kedushin, Rabbi Yaakov says. What's the difference? The pshat is the Gemara and Kedushin is speaking philosophically. Here he's speaking ethically. Gemara and Kedushin is just telling you a proposition. That's it. But over here he's telling you something. He's teaching you something ethically. He's saying that the way to reach perfection is to remove that emotion, that attachment, that desire for the translation of the ultimate good into the physical. So if you remove that desire, then you'll be able to reach perfection. That's what he's saying. Okay? Based on a philosophical principle, but it's an ethical statement. Okay. You understand? The difficulty is in doing it is that we perceive the good in terms of our senses. See? The senses are very convincing. The senses are very convincing and they keep on telling us that this is the good. What they perceive is the good. And it's very hard to remove yourself from that conviction. The only one that could really remove himself from that conviction is a person who can perceive another good. And the only way to perceive another good is to have a total appreciation of the non-physical, of the theoretical. See? It's a very difficult thing. It's not for everybody. It's a hard thing. I'm not saying that it cannot be for most people. I'm just saying in this society, the way things are structured now, definitely, it doesn't look like it could be for everybody. But that's the only way. To have an appreciation of the abstract. That's the only way. If you have no appreciation of the abstract, then your senses are going to tell you to look for the physical, good. Okay. Let's take a look at the Rambam as a different explanation. He says, "V'im kol zeh le'potra," and it's like this. He says, "Ratzibazeh she'yoivdim me'ahava." The Rambam says, right? About three lines down from where the lines get a little smaller. "K'may she'amarnu b'perek yud mi'sanhedrin." Like the Rambam explained in the Chelek. V'im kol zeh, he says, what he says? V'im kol zeh le'potran min ha'yira. Still and all, with all this, he still didn't excuse them from the yira. Right? They still must have the yira shemayim. V'amar im he'yeschem oivdim me'ava, even though you serve Hashem me'ava, le'tanichu ha'yira. You shouldn't let go of the, shouldn't let go of the fear of God. You mustn't let go of that. V'hu, v'hi mar, l'tanicha yor l'gamri, v'hi mar shamayim aleichem, ki kva bo b'ter ha-mitzvah b'yira, v'hu amre yasar Hashem alekecha tira. V'amre ha-chachomim avoid me'av avoid me'yira. Okay? An interesting thing. What's what I'm saying over here? Now you have to do both ways. What's the shot? Avoid me'av means I don't care about the physical. And avoid me'yira means that I'm afraid. So I have to do both simultaneously. It's a contradiction. It's a contradiction. I got to do both. All right? Remember, he says further, Ha'oev lo yishkach dovar mimash atziva la'sefo. A person, the lover, will not forget a thing from which he has been commanded to do. Vayore, and the one who is fearful, lo yase dovar mimash atziva la'sefo, will not do anything from that which he was prohibited to do. Kili yira mavo godol b'mitzvos lo sase. Because yira really is a great part in the mitzvos lo sase. The kol shkem b'mitzvos hashemiyos, and certainly the mitzvos which are chukim. Vay, okay, that's what the Rambam says. Now the Rambam goes with a little story. But the, what does this have to do with it?
What?
It has to do with lo sase NSA. If a person loves somebody, he could just as well refrain from doing certain things. If you love somebody, so therefore you don't want them to be harmed, so therefore you don't drive a truck into them. So that's what Lysa said. I mean, why is it the other side also? If you're afraid of somebody, so you'll be sure to do it. Yeah, do the things commanded. If you don't do the proper things, so then you're going to be hurt. I mean, why does the person pay taxes? Pays taxes, may Ava. He pays taxes, may Yira. Of course, if he doesn't pay taxes, he'll get thrown in jail. So the Ramban also says a similar thing. Same thing. What kind of a pshat is this?
What kind of
pshat? Of course, this would seem to be somewhat of a it's a contradiction somewhat to the yad, because in the yad it says meir over there. Meir in the yad means awe. It doesn't mean fear. But over here it means fear. Over here it means fear. There's no question about it. Over here it means fear. Over there in the yad he explains that an awe is a natural result. It's two sides of the same coin. But over here he means fear. He uses the same pasuk. So Hashem l'kachatira is yira. Okay. Of course, there is one problem with the Yad's formulation also. Because according to the Yad's formulation, why is it two mitzvahs? I mean, it's just the two results of one mitzvah. It's two results of one mitzvah according to the Yad's formulation. The way the Rambam has it more over here, it makes more sense. Because according to the way he has it over here, you see, according to what we have as a Hashem l'kachatira is a separate mitzvah. Of course, we don't understand how the two work together, but it's a mitzvah, a separate mitzvah. In the Yad, it's a little more difficult. How is it two mitzvahs? From the formulation of the Yad, you see, it would appear that the Rambam maintained that two mitzvahs doesn't necessarily mean that you could have to do one without the other. That's the way it would seem from the Yad. That you could have two mitzvahs, the reason why it counts as two mitzvahs is not necessarily dependent upon action. In other words, if I have one action which necessarily has two results, does that mean that I can only count it as one mitzvah? From the Yad, it would seem not that way. An interesting thing. I mean, you would think in terms of tzivu, it should be that way, because it's one commandment. You command me to do something. Once you command me to do one action, and one action has two results, the mitzvah should be broken down according to the actions. That's the way it would be logical. And that's the way the Rambam has it over here. But in the Yad, he doesn't seem to maintain that way. He seems to maintain that if I do one action,